If you'd like to listen to the Daily Blast, plus all of our other DSR content without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code GREG to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code GREG. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Today, jury selection in Donald Trump's hush money trial begins in New York. Trump is accused of falsifying business records in order to cover up a payment made to conceal his alleged affair with Mistress Stormy Daniels. This has been widely dismissed as a weak case, but is it? One person who has argued that it is not a weak case is Dave Ehrenberg, a prosecutor in Florida, who writes about these matters for Midas Touch News. So we're hoping Ehrenberg can give us a sense of what to expect from the trial now that it's getting underway. Welcome, Dave.
Great to be with you, Greg.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. Trump faces 34 counts of falsifying business records, but that isn't itself a felony. It's only a felony if he does this pursuant to another alleged crime, which in this case is a campaign finance violation. His former fixer, Michael Cohen, paid $130,000 to Daniels to buy her silence about their alleged affair in advance of the 2016 election. Trump reimbursed Cohen for those payments and allegedly falsified the reason for those reimbursements. Can you walk us through what the relevant laws say, what Trump did, and what exactly he's charged with?
Sure. It is a misdemeanor in New York to falsify your business records, and that's true whether you are a private company or a public company, and the Trump Organization is a private company. So not a lot of people look at their books, but they still have to record things legally and honestly. And what happened here was that Trump allegedly paid off a porn star with whom he had an affair, Stormy Daniels. He did it by having Michael Cohen, his lawyer, pay Stormy Daniels $130,000. Then Michael Cohen was reimbursed in installments over time and then given a little extra for his trouble. And it was recorded within the Trump Organization's records as legal fees. Well, they're not legal fees. This was a hush money payment. And how do you make it a felony? Well, under New York law, the falsification of business records has to conceal another crime. If it conceals another crime, then it rises to a felony. And what is that other crime? Alvin Bragg is indicating that it is a campaign finance violation, meaning that Trump engaged in election interference, that he wanted to hide this affair, this payoff, from the public before the election and did not record it on finance forms like campaign finance documents. You've got to reveal any contribution you make, any expenditure you make. And since this was hidden from the public, it amounted to election interference, it amounted to a campaign finance crime, and thus it's a felony.
So the idea that this is a weak case stems from the campaign finance side of it. Prosecutors have to prove that Trump falsified business records to facilitate the crime that Cohen committed, right? Which Cohen pleaded guilty to, that is, payments in excess of campaign finance limits. So are these the key questions then? Is the $130,000 a campaign expenditure? And is a violation in a federal race, the presidential race, relevant in a state prosecution? Is that the way to understand the key questions here? Can you unravel all that for us?
Yes. The reason why people think this is a weak case is first, they see January 6th, and we can understand that is a case of huge importance. I mean, that was the attempted overthrow of our democracy. Then they look at this and they say, oh, he was trying to cover up an affair. Big deal. But if it's election interference, that is a big deal. But that's one reason. Another reason is that there's still an open question in the law as to whether a state prosecutor can piggyback on a federal law to create a felony. So he has the New York misdemeanors, the falsification of business records. He's got that. In fact, Trump really doesn't have much of a defense to that. But Trump realizes that he's not going down for misdemeanors, but he could go down for felonies. And what makes this a felony is that the district attorney, a state prosecutor, is piggybacking on a federal campaign finance law to say that's the second crime. Can he do that? Well, it's not really clear. And that's where an appellate court may have to weigh in and have the final say on this. So that's when people say it's a weak case. I think it's for those two reasons. I dismissed the first part where they say it's just not a fair. This is actually election interference. I think it is a reason to move forward. It is strong. But when it comes to the second question, whether or not, as a matter of law, you can piggyback on a federal crime, that's where there are questions raised and where I think there are legitimate claims that maybe this isn't the strongest case to go first.
Okay, you've written that this is not a weak case, though, and so I want to try to get at why that is. A big question here is whether Trump can be shown to have falsified business records with an intent to defraud. If I understand this correctly, that intent to defraud rests on this idea, right? Internal company documents misrepresented the nature of Trump's payments, reimbursing Cohen as legal fees, as you noted earlier, with an eye specifically toward misleading potential investigators later. That, plus a misleading Federal Election Commission document filed later, were expressly designed to conceal the real intent of the payments, i.e. to conceal the commission of a crime should this ultimately be investigated. Is that the right way to understand this?
Yes, and a reason why I say, although this is not the strongest of the four cases, I would rank it fourth out of four, it's still not a weak case. It is not a weak case because the people who say it's a weak case also say that it's going to be very hard to convince a jury that Trump intentionally tried to deceive the public through an elections crime as opposed to just trying to protect his marriage. Donald Trump is sure to use the John Edwards defense. You may remember former presidential candidate John Edwards, who was charged with campaign finance violation, similar to Trump. He was acquitted on one count and the other counts were hung, and the federal prosecutors decided not to go ahead with another prosecution, and then he walked. With Trump, he's going to try to invoke the same defense, saying, I did not intend to commit a campaign finance violation. This was about saving my marriage. This was about trying to conceal this affair and the hush money from my wife. But I don't think that's a great defense for Trump, because John Edwards had a better defense. See, John Edwards had outside donors who paid his mistress, and the payment started well before the election and continued after the election. So he had a legitimate claim that had nothing to do with the election. For Trump, he and his people knew about this problem with Stormy Daniels since 2011. In fact, Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, was in communication with Stormy Daniels' lawyer as early as 2011, but the payments didn't happen until 2 weeks before the 2016 election. So the timing here is devastating for that particular defense. Plus, there are other reasons why. Like, for example, Trump allegedly told Michael Cohen, let's delay the payments until after the election, then we don't have to make it at all. He wanted to rip off Stormy Daniels by saying, let's cut the deal, and then after the election, he wouldn't have to pay because it didn't matter after then.
There's also recording of Trump talking about this. Can you address that?
Michael Cohen had recorded Trump secretly, and that is going to go to the question of intent for Trump, because when Trump says, I don't know anything about this. In fact, Michael Cohen, he's suggesting, acted on his own. Michael Cohen just did this as a rogue lawyer, but I've heard of lawyers helping their clients, but I've never heard of a lawyer magnanimously paying $130,000 out of their own pocket just to protect their client from something.
And what's on the audio?
Well, we have on the audio where Trump is aware they're going to, you know, do this secretly. Trump suggested, let's do it in cash. Michael Cohen said, no. There's a better way to do it. And that's how this started. So he was aware he was part of this from the beginning.
The Washington Post has reported that Trump intends to deny participation in conversations with Cohen about the payments. But isn't it fair to expect that Bragg will have new and possibly extensive evidence of those conversations, and also evidence that Trump specifically sought to mislead investigators later about the payments to Cohen? What do you think about that possibility?
Michael Cohen has been saying in interviews that there will be surprises. And I take that to mean there are recordings that perhaps we just don't know about that will reveal Trump's involvement in his attempt to hide his participation, and it will show his intent and a level of obstruction, perhaps. So I think that's where Michael Cohen may be going. Alvin Bragg would not have gone forward with this case. He'd be the first prosecutor in the history of the country to go after a former president unless he knew he had enough evidence to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. If this case deadlocks or is acquitted, then he'll have egg all over his face. And I think this case poses a real problem for Trump, not just with the evidence, not just with the potential of surprise, not just with the fact that the guy who knows where all the bodies are buried, his own lawyer, is the key witness for the state. But the fact is that the jury pool here in Manhattan is a really bad jury pool for Donald Trump. That's a community that voted around 12% for Trump in the last election. So you can see why he is freaking out and trying to delay this matter, because that may be his best defense, to try to delay it past the election. But Judge Merchant is not having any of it.
I want to talk to you about the jury in a second. But for now, right, just to be absolutely clear about this, if you're right and Cohen is telegraphing that there's going to be new evidence, possibly new recordings, showing Trump's intent to defraud and deceive and conceal in even more damning detail, then wouldn't it start to really look like a pretty strong case?
Yes. And I have said, and you have correctly said that I have said, Greg, that this is not a weak case. The only thing is, as a matter of law, there's still the chance that on appeal, an appellate court could say, you know, state prosecutors, they can't piggyback on the federal elections laws. So that's the only reason why I have some, you know, questions about this case. Otherwise, I'd say this is as strong as any of the others. But for the reasons I've mentioned, this case does have its issues. So here's the other potential defense for Trump. He's just going to put Michael Cohen on trial. Michael Cohen, who is his former lawyer, the key witness, has a prior conviction for lying and for felonies. And so he is not a perfect witness. But on the other hand, he lied for Trump. And that's going to be his explanation. Yeah, he lied under oath in front of Congress, but he lied to protect Trump when it came to his dealings with a Moscow development, a hotel out there in Moscow. So that's why I think that this case is still going to be strong, because the main witness is a guy who knows all.
Right. Well, I think you point to a pretty funny irony there, and a potential problem for Trump. And I'm not sure he's able to perceive this problem, right? But he is essentially indicting himself by indicting Michael Cohen. I mean, he employed Michael Cohen to lie on his behalf and to game the system on his behalf in all kinds of ways. And so Cohen's defense against Trump's attacks on him will be, you hired me to do all this, which of course blows up in Trump's face, I think, politically as well as legally. You're the state attorney for Palm Beach County. If you were prosecuting this case, I know you don't have access to the evidence Bragg does, but would you view it as winnable? And if so, why?
Absolutely winnable, for all the reasons why we've mentioned. And plus, as far as Michael Cohen, not only can he explain that he lied to protect Trump, but he went to prison for, among other things, the same matter that Trump is being put on trial for. So when they say you're a convicted felon, yeah, I was convicted for the same thing you're being accused of. Cohen went to prison for a number of reasons, but a main thing was a campaign finance violation. And what was his campaign finance violation? Lying about the Stormy Daniels hush money payments. And the question was, well, why didn't Trump get charged? Because Trump, when Michael Cohen went down for this, Trump was mentioned in the indictment. He was like individual number one. And the feds, though, did not prosecute Trump. And the reason why they didn't was that federal prosecutors have an internal policy that says you do not indict a sitting president. And Trump was president. Right. But now, then Trump was not president and Merrick Garland pursued this matter. That is another question for a lot of us. Why didn't the Department of Justice go ahead and charge Trump after he left office for this? And we still don't know the answer to that definitively, but it's something that hangs over this case.
Absolutely. And to go back to what you brought up earlier about the jury, the Times has reported that the Trump team wants younger black men and white working class men and people who have had a bad experience with the legal system on the jury. I mean, it's kind of a sick joke that Trump, who has used sophisticated high-priced lawyering to game the system to avoid accountability and enjoy a level of impunity that only wealthy and connected elites enjoy for decades, would try to trade on anger among people who have had no such privilege. But that aside, is there any reason to think jurors would see Trump as a victim here?
No, but you have to be careful during what's called voir dire, that's jury selection, to weed out the Trojan horse, weed out the people who want to get on the jury so they could bail out Trump for this. Trump has real loyal supporters, and you want to make sure one doesn't get on. Now, it's okay if there are Trump supporters on the jury. It's okay if people know about this case. They just have to be able to say under oath that they will put aside their biases and just follow the evidence and the law. And that's why I think you'll get a jury here, just like in every other high-profile case. And for those who think it's still impossible, well, Paul Manafort was convicted of various crimes, and that jury included at least one hardcore Trump supporter who voted to convict. Donald Trump was found liable in the E. Jean Carroll case, the first time, that included a juror who was a devotee of right-wing podcasts, MAGA podcasts. So it can be done. You just have to find jurors who say, yeah, I'll follow the evidence, and you've got to be able to believe that person. But I do think that it is rich that Trump is apparently seeking, you know, young black men and young people who are going to feel the same way he does about being wronged by the criminal justice system. This is Trump's secret sauce to be able to convince people who he has nothing in common with that he is fighting for them. These are the same people, you know, in his base who, if they ever showed up at Mar-a-Lago, would never be allowed on his lawn. He would release the hounds.
Absolutely. I want to go big picture with you on this. Some have dismissed the whole case on the grounds that the campaign finance violation in question is itself pretty small potatoes. I mean, even if you accept that that's true, I feel like it misses a larger point, right? Which is that the overall transgression here is extremely serious. Trump committed alleged crimes to scam his way into the presidency, to deceive American voters, and keep them entirely in the dark about some really important information that they had every right to know. Even if one of the means employed toward the end of fraud is not itself a major crime, that seems separate and distinct from whether the overall offense is grave. In this case, it is grave. The defrauding facilitated by the smaller offense was an extremely serious offense. I mean, as Substacker Brian Beutler has put it, if Trump had behaved as a law-abiding citizen in the 2016 election, he wouldn't have been elected president. Is that a fair way to think about the bigger issues involved here?
Yes, and there's precedent for putting people on trial who engage in this conduct. John Edwards, who ran for president, he was put on trial for this very conduct. Now, the fact is he was able to escape a conviction, but it didn't mean the prosecution was unjust. Plus, there will be a person in that courtroom who will have been convicted and put in prison and served prison time for this very crime, Michael Cohen. And so, you know, you have to have a system where no one is above the law, or else just admit we have a king in that there are certain people who get special privileges, while the little guy like Michael Cohen serves prison time. The people on top who organize and direct the scheme, they get away with it. Is that the country you want? No, I think that's why it's a righteous case. It's just, to me, the only weakness really is whether, according to a matter of law, you can piggyback on a federal law at the state level. And that's something appellate judges are going to have to deal with.
Right. And that's something that, you know, in fairness, maybe could end up getting resolved in Trump's direction, but it might not. And we need clarity on this point. Let me ask you this in as blunt a way as possible. If there's a lot more evidence, or even if there's just some more evidence from Bragg about Trump's secret machinations with Cohen, then might this case not be stronger than it looks?
Yes, and that's where the surprises may come in. But it's more than just any hidden any video or recording that we don't know about. It's also the corroboration that the prosecutors are going to put on. They're going to put on David Pecker, who was the head of the National Enquirer at the time. He received an immunity deal in the past, and so he's still subject to that. And the reason why he was never charged was because he cooperated. He's going to testify in favor of the state. That's a powerful witness. You're also going to have Stormy Daniels herself. Now, as the subject here, as an adult film star, she has her own credibility issues in front of a jury. Generally, jurors aren't thrilled with people in her line of work. Plus, she'll have to admit that, yes, she did get paid off for her silence. So there needs to be more corroboration. And they do have at least one very powerful witness, and that's Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks has no axe to grind like Michael Cohen. Hope Hicks is a Trump loyalist. She would travel on Air Force One steaming Trump's pants, apparently while Trump was still wearing them, according to a book. She has no reason to lie, and yet she apparently is cooperating and testified before the grand jury here, and she can corroborate that Trump knew that this was going on. And that, to me, is the most powerful bit of evidence, because they're going to try to destroy Michael Cohen's credibility, Stormy Daniels' credibility, and even David Pecker's credibility. But Hope Hicks, how do you undermine her? She still loves Trump, but she's apparently doing the right thing. The only thing you can say about Hope Hicks, perhaps, is that she did tell a congressional committee in 2019 that she didn't have any participation or involvement in any of this. So maybe she can thread the needle here and say, well, I wasn't lying then, but it looks like she may have been deceiving the committee back then when she claimed she didn't know anything.
I mean, it sure looks to me like anyone who predicted that this would be a weak case jumped the gun. Now, that could end up proving right. I think you've said that, and I want to be clear that that is a real possibility. But it looks to me, above all, much more likely that this will be stronger than we expect, especially because of Bragg's role here. I mean, it's very hard for me to imagine that Bragg, who we should remember, actually at first dismissed this. Remember, there was a period where he actually looked at it and said, well, there's not much here. And then later he turned around and said, yeah, there is. And so you got to think that they found some new stuff. And so for Bragg, of all people, to forge ahead with this, given the immense risk of failure here, seems to me to suggest that there's probably much more than we know about.
Yeah, they used to refer to this case as the zombie case because it just wouldn't die. It kept coming back over and again, and they kept going back to it and then finally deciding, yeah, we got enough. Let's move ahead. Another reason why some people think it's not strong is because the maximum penalty you can get for each conviction would be up to 4 years in prison. And he's not going to get anywhere near that. But, you know, you have all these counts piled up times four. That's a lot of time. It's just that if the maximum is 4 years, that dwarfs in comparison with these federal charges against Trump that can get him, you know, 20 years, 10 years each count. And I think that's a reason why people think this is small potatoes. But whether or not he gets prison time, if he is convicted of this, you're going to have the prospective Republican candidate for president with a felony hanging over his head, a convicted felon, which, according to polls, does move the needle for at least some voters. And it doesn't take many voters to move on this to decide the election.
Yeah, and it's probably worth underscoring that if he is convicted of this, a lot of people will be able to go out and make the case that if we had all known what we know now, he never would have been elected in the first place. So you're really going to vote for this guy again? Dave Ehrenberg, thanks so much for your time today. Great discussion.
Thank you, Greg.
Folks, definitely check out two new pieces we have up at TNR.com. Michael Tomasky explaining why this week's hush money trial may finally represent Trump's comeuppance in more ways than one, and Matt Ford on shady right-wing efforts to keep President Biden off some states' ballots. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.